From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
And you're right, it is the Dana Pretzer Show. Of course, we're on satellite, we're on the internet, wherever you can find us, Access Communications Channel 7, all sorts of wonderful places. Of course, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Have you heard of human trafficking? Yeah, I said that right. Human trafficking. Tonight, LaDonna Meredith is here. She's from Let's Bring Them Home. And, of course, their webpage is letsbringthemhome.org. And I thought we'd talk about this disturbing trend. You know, we hear about missing people, and we try to cover as many stories as we can here on the show and help those families that can't get the help that they deserve or to get their stories out there. I thought we'd bring LaDonna on tonight to talk about human trafficking. Hi, LaDonna.
Hi.
Nice to have you back on the program. Now, when you say human trafficking, a lot of people will sit back listening to the show, either live or on the podcast or watching us on television, and say, what is human trafficking?
Well, there are many different definitions, but basically human trafficking involves human slavery, bondage, sex trade, heinous crimes that people like you and I find it hard to imagine. But human trafficking equates to nothing more than a human rights abuse problem.
Now, when we look at that, does this just involve young children? I've covered the Madeleine McCann case quite extensively here on my program, and that was one of the topics that was brought up about that. Natalie Holloway, early on, there was talk about her being kidnapped and put into a sex slave ring. Or is it involve anywhere from young children to elderly?
Well, you know, primarily, by nature, it involves women and children, by nature. That's not to say that it doesn't happen to young men or that it doesn't happen to older people, because, quite honestly, I'm sure that it does. The problem is that, by definition, because of the hidden nature of trafficking activities, gathering true statistics of the magnitude and of the population and of the problem is almost impossible. But we do know from the U.S. State Department that on average 600,000 to 800,000 people are trafficked across international borders each year, and that is for sex trade or forced labor.
Just run those numbers by me one more time, because a lot of people are going to say, did we hear that right?
And you did hear it right. It's between 600 and 800,000 people.
How do they come up with these numbers? That's an awful lot of people.
It is an awful lot of people, but what we're finding is that through the study from the U.S. State Department is that this estimate are women and children that have been taken across sometimes international borders, sometimes brought to the United States, sometimes taken from the United States across lines. And so to get these true statistics, we're talking to people who have actually been involved in these crimes. They've been forced into labor. And then there are other countries where it's quite obvious, it's not as well hidden as it is in the United States, who is being held for forced labor or forced sex trade.
Let's talk about the forced labor aspect of it, and then we'll get into the sex trade a little bit later. What do you mean by forced labor, and what kind of cases can we discuss here?
Well, as we get further into talking tonight, maybe we can hit on some different examples, but forced labor basically means, and we see this more internationally, it is being forced into a situation where you're working for maybe pennies a day. This is going to primarily happen in other countries. You get into a situation where that's what you know. You know, there's children being born to parents who are working for people for literally pennies a day, and they can't get out. There's just no way. You know, we're talking about people who don't have the freedoms that we have in the United States, or sometimes possibly the democracy that we have in the United States. A great big revenue from trafficking activities, which again, comes from the U.S. State Department, is in the billions. And that is from, you know, places that are considered the brothel industry. And, again, while that is forced labor, that does then fall into the sex trade. So what you find is there is a phenomenal amount of young women who are being tricked into these what are so-called jobs, and the job changes into a forced labor sex trade type of situation.
Thailand, Indonesia, places like that, we hear a lot of that. Let's mention the immigration aspect of that. We talk about it here on the program all the time, the quote-unquote illegal immigrants in the United States. Are they being captured into this as a way to stay in the country, or they think that it's a way for them to stay into the country, and in turn they're being, they're being trafficked?
Well, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. But again, you go back to the hidden nature of trafficking activities. And so unless you've got somebody that's escaped from that situation that's willing to find the courage to come forward and tell their story, you know, some of it is based upon undercover work by authorities, tips. But yes, that's happened quite frequently. And what we find statistically is that every 10 minutes, a woman or child is tricked into human trafficking into the United States for forced labor. So around the world, it is estimated that 27 million people are living in this kind of slavery, and human trafficking has become a $12 billion a year global industry. So, I mean, the numbers are staggering, but it's a real problem, and, you know, it stems from the African slave trade that lasted for centuries. We're just seeing it in a different form.
What industries are involved in this trafficking?
Unfortunately, it's mostly slave trade work, pornography industry. We're seeing some factory type work in other countries that involves human trafficking. What you find primarily is that there's usually some kind of fraud in the beginning. In another country, a young girl might be promised a job at $2,000 a month, you know, when maybe she's only used to making a couple of hundred dollars a month. She goes to a place, travels with this person, and then gets into foreign territory where she doesn't speak the language, and she gets thrown into an abusive situation where she's being beaten and forced to continue on. And where can she turn to for help? Because she's been isolated and she can't speak the language. And so the people who are behind the human trafficking, they're very, very smart in what they do, because it's a very lucrative business. So they're finding ways to keep this under the radar so people can't get caught.
Government response, Interpol, FBI, RCMP, you name it. What are we hearing? I know this story itself, unless you're in an investigative realm, either through broadcasting or law enforcement or through an organization like your own, you don't hear much about. Are the governments and law enforcement agencies doing something to stem this? It sounds like it's a huge epidemic.
It is a huge epidemic, and for the most part, yes, it's something that is being looked into. I think that it's becoming more of a hot topic, a hot button issue, as we continue to watch this industry grow. But the problem of this itself is it's the hidden nature of the crime. So until somebody, you know, is able to break out of that cycle and come forward and tell authorities and then be able to have the courage to help them do undercover work to make it stop, it's a vicious cycle. And it happens so frequently that, you know, something has to be done about it now. And so that's primarily why Let's Bring Them Home got involved. We are finding that several of the cases, and I can talk about that maybe in subsequent shows, that those cases, these women are missing because they've been tricked into human trafficking. And it's a topic to me that is very close to home, because we know that statistically 2,300 people go missing each day in the United States. And of those people that aren't recovered, I think there's a great possibility that they fall within the 600,000 to 800,000 people that are falling into human trafficking. So it's something that we want to stand up and be on the forefront of helping make a difference with this problem.
Helping make a difference is what we're all about. But when it comes to media coverage of such stories, we don't hear a lot of it. Some of the quote-unquote tabloid shows may cover it, and people may watch and not believe. What more could the media or should the media be doing about this?
Well, for us, the first step was tonight, being invited to be on the show, which we're appreciative of. We want to be able to slowly introduce this to the media. I think that the best way to approach this is to be very factual with the media, for them to accept the facts, not sensationalize it. You have to understand that the people that are involved in human trafficking are not the normal thing that the media wants to cover. They
right.
want the wealthy, the beautiful. And that's just not the way this problem works. And so what we want to do is convince the media that every case is important, because the fact is every case is important. And so we're going to stand up and fight for those that don't have a voice for themselves. And I want to read you a quote, and it's from a convicted racketeer who was involved in human trafficking. And he said this. He said, "You can buy a woman for $10,000, and you can make your money back in a week if she is pretty and she is young. Then everything else is profit."
Yeah.
And so it's heartbreaking, but there's two problems. One is the fact that there are people that are getting involved in human trafficking because they see that it's lucrative. They say, hey, I can make $50,000 a month if I trick X amount of young girls or children into this type of lifestyle. But then the second problem is it's a $12 billion a year industry. Okay, somebody's paying for these services.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised at the people that are involved in human trafficking.
The people that are paying, it's a vicious circle, I guess. Right down from the indigent, it could be a streetwalker to a runaway child to a family that, can't care for themselves, and they target the child. Let's look at the pornography aspect of it. Covering pedophiles, kiddie porn, the whole pornography industry, again, put dollar values on that. It's staggering. How much is involved with this directly? The trafficking and pornography?
We know that statistically a good 30 to 45%. So, the people who think that recreational pornography doesn't hurt anyone, it's hurting a lot of people. And so, to be able to put a stop to even the ability to purchase this legally would put a huge dent in the human trafficking problem. Again, when children are trafficked to be exploited, that's going to be better hidden, because the child pornography problem is hard to uncover. And that is something that we are going to look at very proactively at as an organization, to become a voice for those children and to become a voice to the nation through a public service education campaign, because we want people to understand that what you think you're doing in secret, purchasing pornography, participating in this behavior, you're quite possibly purchasing something that was filmed by someone who didn't make the choice to participate in that pornographic film. And so we want people to look at it in a different way. And I think that for the most part that people need to know that, and I think that that might make the difference on whether they go ahead and make that purchase.
The internet isn't regulated. It's a bastion for every kind of freak and freeloader and bottom-sucking scum that there is out there. We see stories about young children. In fact, there's one very prevalent in the media right now that the video is there, but we don't know who the child is. What ages are we looking at? This starts very young and goes into the late teens, does it not, as far as the porn aspect? Human trafficked children?
We have seen documented cases as young as 6 years old.
Days.
We have to believe that there are cases of younger children. It's just, they've just not been documented. But, that's pretty horrific. And again, the statistics are so hard to grab, but we know that in other countries, it is more acceptable for the, you know, the child pornography or the young teenage sex trade. And that's very attractive in other countries. So what we hope to do is to pilot this project over the next year in the United States through a variety of methods, and then start working towards getting that information to other countries. Because then once you can make people aware of the problem, I think that will empower those who are victims that might not otherwise stand up for themselves, you know, come forward. But it is a vicious cycle. Let's take the 6-year-old girl, for instance. She could very well be kept captive until her mid-20s,
right,
early 30s.
Yeah.
And then by that point in her life, she's been so exploited, her identity is gone, probably ridden with disease. She's probably not going to leave, or if she does, she's not going to make it out in the world because she's just been used up. And so we want to also create opportunities for those very people who have been victims of this crime. So it's a huge problem, and we really want the media to grab a hold of it, because that's going to be the key to making a difference and making a dent in this business.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, LaDonna Meredith is here from Let's Bring Them Home. Of course, their webpage is letsbringthemhome.org. LaDonna, when it comes to these types of stories and the education process they're in, we have to be able to get our message across to families that think that their child or their loved one may be a victim of human trafficking. They may be indigent. They may think that the police, or may have gone to the police or an organization that doesn't believe them. How do we get the message across to them that we want to help and we can help?
Well, I think that is just a matter of education. I think educating yourself on the topic is key, and I think it's key for an organization such as ourselves to make that information available to police departments and on a national basis. Otherwise, it's right now it's just a voiceless crime. You know, year after year, these statistics come in, the stories of the human exploitation are made public, and most people want to believe that it can't happen or that it doesn't happen or how could that happen? You know, we're in a civilized country.
Right.
It happens every day. You know, forced prostitution happens in the United States every day. That's human trafficking. But people don't want to accept it. They want to assume that that woman wants to be a prostitute. And, of course, there are those cases. But there are very many more cases of women who are forced into it. But it leads to a whole entire different explosion of problems. It leads to an explosion of HIV, which we're just seeing that disease just rapidly double, triple, you know, quadruple. We see other diseases, even things such as tuberculosis, because of human trafficking. These are serious health problems, but they're flowing directly from, you know, these statistics. I mean, of these 600,000 to 800,000 people who are involved in human trafficking, they're not getting health care. They're being kept in unimaginable conditions.
This question may not be fair to you, probably should be addressed to someone in power in government, but let's talk about the immigration issue. Let's talk about illegal immigrants. The amount that do come into North America, not just the United States, Canada included, and a lot of them come in indigent, become wards of the street, so to speak, and that adds to the problem of them being targets for this human trafficking. Can you comment on that?
I really can't. It's not that I don't want to. I think that that's still part of the issue of human trafficking that I need to better educate myself on. I mean, let's be honest. I've read dozens of books. I do think it is a very fair question. I just don't think it's one that I can answer adequately.
Well, fair enough. For those of you that are just tuning in, LaDonna Meredith is here for about 5 more minutes from letsbringthemhome.org. LaDonna, for those that are hearing you for the first time, let's talk about Let's Bring Them Home and what your organization is all about. It's more than just human trafficking.
Absolutely. We are an advocacy group for missing children and adults. And we accomplish that advocacy in three very specific ways. One is education. One is public relations on behalf of the families that have missing loved ones. And then the development of safety programs. And we're a national organization, and we have been growing by leaps and bounds in the past 6 months. It's just incredible.
And that's the way that it should be, is because organizations like yours need to be able to have the voice, need to be able to come forward and say, we're here, we can help. Because, like you say, and the numbers are just staggering, you know, people, they won't believe them initially, but they are out there. We hear of a different case every day. The news media, like you say, they like to run with something that has some schmaltz to it, something that they can, you know, the pretty blue-eyed, blonde-haired girl, and not taking away from that case. But those types of cases, there are a lot more out there. When you talk about media relations, what does Let's Bring Them Home do to help everyone get their story out?
Well, we tailor our services to each individual case. And so we do a variety of things. We go to every city in which we take a case, and we host a press conference. We build relationships with the media and with law enforcement. We then continue to actively pursue different angles of the case. We offer a toll-free tip line, which has been very successful. We've had 4 recoveries in the last 6 months. And then we also, in other cases, we offer rewards, and we sometimes help put together searches with search and rescue groups. So really, we just run the gamut on what we can do. But we take each case on a case-by-case basis, because not any two cases are going to be identical. And what we're finding is that there's nobody in the nation doing what we do the way we do it. And we want to make a difference. And I hope that we are. And I know that we're going to continue to do everything that we can until we can help bring all the missing home. And that may not happen, but that's our goal.
That's a very worthy goal. We just have a couple of minutes left. LaDonna, like I do every time I have you on the show, let's talk about someone who's missing that you're featuring on your website.
Well, we have several new cases that aren't on our website, and I think the last few times that we talked about Clinton Nelson.
Right.
We are specifically working on the case right now of a girl named Penny Preston, who has been missing for over 5 years. I don't have her case file in front of me.
That's fine.
She has
yeah.
had absolutely no help with the media. So we're working very actively in that case. And we've just taken on 5 additional cases by 5 o'clock today, which is something, you know, just phenomenal. We're finding we're never going to work ourselves out of a job, which is unfortunate. But so we are recovering from the recovery, actually, of one of our newest cases, Nelson Berger, and he was recovered just about 3 weeks ago. So we've definitely been busy, and we're taking on some new projects, and we hope to continue to get the word out about what we do so people will visit our website and hopefully recognize some of the cases that are on that site.
The website is letsbringthemhome.org. Again, that's letsbringthemhome.org. LaDonna Meredith, you're always welcome on the program. And we'll continue this investigative segment on human trafficking next time, and we'll actually get into some individual cases. How's that sound?
That would be spectacular.
Yeah, we'll certainly arrange that. Always nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. It was nice to be here. We appreciate what you do for the missing.
Take care. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's LaDonna Meredith from letsbringthemhome.org. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be back in just a minute with Ed Losey. Ed Losey is a Hollywood publicist. He represented Lana Clarkson. And here we go. We have another Los Angeles jury letting a Hollywood type, Phil Spector in this case, go. Well, at least a hung jury in this case. And we'll have Ed Losey here in a couple of minutes to talk about that. And an interesting lawsuit between Zsa Zsa Gabor and her daughter. Yeah, you heard me right. That's here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Fritzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Is there such thing as a fair Hollywood jury, a Los Angeles jury, when it comes to a criminal case? O.J. Simpson, Robert Blake, and now Phil Spector has come into a hung jury. And a mistrial has been declared. Thankfully, this will go back and be prosecuted again. Edward Losey is the former publicist of Lana Clarkson, who, in my opinion, Phil Spector is responsible for taking off of this earth. He joins me here to talk about that trial, and we're going to talk a little bit about Zsa Zsa Gabor and the lawsuit against her daughter, Francesca Hilton. Ed Losey, welcome.
Hi, Dana. Good to be back.
Nice to have you back on the program. Lana Clarkson, I want to address this right away before we get started. There's a... I consider to be a very low-class internet site. I'm not even going to mention their webpage that has sadly put some photos of the crime scene of Lana Clarkson on the internet. And when I heard about that, it just turned my stomach. And I think that this doesn't do anything to help put the murderer in jail. It just is, it's tabloid at best. That's my opinion, but we won't go any further. You're Lana Clarkson's former publicist. You're her friend. When did you first meet her?
I met Lana Clarkson in 1981 at a really cool party in Westwood, California, and she walked into the room. She was in her early 20s, and it was like a Charlize Theron walking into the room, or the girl from Ipanema. Everybody stopped and looked. But she entered the room with her incredible sense of humor and wit and funniness. She had just rode in the back seat of a big Cadillac in the Hollywood Christmas parade. And she was so excited, not because there was a bunch of stars around, but because she got to hug and kiss Santa Claus on camera. And, that's a big part of the Hollywood Christmas parade is Santa, at the end comes with the big reindeer and all, so.
Right.
I just thought that was very endearing. I fell in love with her right there. And it seems like yesterday, but, there's a 26-year career there of a consummate actress, producer, and comedian. That's what she was.
Well, she could do it all, and she absolutely, like you say, drop-dead gorgeous from the video I've seen and the pictures. It's just a shame, and it just angers me, and I'm sure many others, and of course yourself, to see a life like that taken from this earth. What the hell happened at this trial, Ed?
Well, everything was going well. First of all, we have a dumb downtown Los Angeles jury, which is pretty much known for letting people of some kind of fame off.
Yeah,
it's a really pathetic jury pool. You've got people that work or don't work. This particular jury was 9 men and 3 women, which was right off to the start. Some of them were foreign born, meaning that they're from countries where, pulling a gun on a girl to have sex is not, is that that big of a deal?
Right.
Talking about Asia and Mexico.
Yeah.
So where women are sort of lower on the totem pole when it comes to esteem and respect. So, some people will attack me for those statements. I don't care. Bring it on. There's 3 women. The two dumbed down idiots who were probably asleep through most of the trial, because many of them were. The judge had actually wake some of them up during the trial because it was so tedious and horrible listening to the mumbo jumbo of the defense.
Right.
With the forensic mumbo jumbo, that it put some of the sleep. Even Spector fell asleep.
Yeah.
And, I was in the courtroom at least once a week throughout the trial. And I said, oops, this isn't going to be good. But I really think that there are 7 or 8 other factors, but to get 10 is a pretty good deal. The prosecution, you couldn't get any better than Alan Jackson and Pat Dixon. That's the best that any municipality can offer up against the biggest guns that money can buy on the defense side. but they did an excellent job, and I hope they're with it on the second time around. I understand that he's going to be rearrested by Thursday and retried. So, you know, it's not going to involve jail. It'll be the same thing with the bail. Maybe. I don't know. They may have to renegotiate bail again. I don't know.
Have they talked about a change of venue? And again, that's just speculation on my part, but you're right, talking about dumb juries in Los Angeles, there certainly are.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't think it qualifies for a change of jury because of where the murder was. But, you know, let me say something. Let me get this off my chest right now. You asked me about the reasons, and there's a numerous reasons. And one of them is something that, two stupid lawyers who represent Lana Clarkson's mother and sister. They're two really stupid lawyers who gave stupid advice to them. For 5 years almost, they required the mother and the daughter to remain mute, to remain totally silent, not to say one word in defense of their child, their sister. Not one time did they come forward when they had every opportunity to, before the trial began, for all of us who are potential jurors to listen to. What does that tell a jury when you've got nothing coming from the mother and daughter? What does that tell a jury?
Exactly.
I don't think it was very good legal advice, and I co-blame them. And for now, for them to keep them on as the wrongful death trial attorneys, yikes.
Yeah,
and that's the reason they kept them quiet. They went public and they attacked me as well. They came after anybody that spoke about Lana Clarkson who went to the media to defend her or talk about who she was. We heard from these two dodos who said, you're going to screw up our money case. You're going to screw up the wrongful death case. We want you to shut up. And I didn't want it. I mean, they were referring to Lana Clarkson right after the murder. The media were talking about her as a wannabe actress, a B-star. The Beverly Hills Courier referred to her as that blonde. The Los Angeles Times referred to her as a cocktail waitress.
Yeah.
We had to change all that, and we did, and I'm very proud of myself and the staff here of working on her behalf. Don't represent the mother and daughter. We don't represent the wrongful death side. We don't care about the money or the civil suit. We cared about this criminal trial and getting this psychotic, gun-crazy person off the streets. You know that over 100 people came forward and signed affidavits that he had pulled loaded guns on them. These are people that are, some of them very well established, including two major rock stars, Debbie Harry and Michelle Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas. And only 5 women were allowed to testify, which was great, better than nothing.
Right.
Bob Shapiro's original attorney and Leslie Abramson tried to get those women blocked. They tried to get the original grand jury minutes sealed forever. It took the Los Angeles Times to sue the Los Angeles criminal courts to get those documents revealed to the public, which we learned about these women. So actually the Times is my hero here, which is very rare.
Ed, if we could, let's follow up a little bit on the media coverage. I like you, am disgusted with how it was portrayed. In particular, a lot of murder cases, OJ, this case, where the victim is, like you say, the cocktail waitress or something. Yet we hear about this legacy of Phil Spector. And today, just looking through the internet and some of the major trades, we see pictures of Phil Spector with John Lennon from however many years ago. But the fact of the matter is that he has been accused of murder. He will be tried again for murder. Why does the media cover these cases the way that they do and not give the victims the respect they deserve in some cases?
That's a great point. It's something that I've been speaking about for almost 5 years. Phil Spector is pretty much a loser from, you know, these last 20 years. I'm quoting, you know, what Donald Trump says about people.
Right, yeah.
Phil Spector, you know, he had his day, and pretty much nobody knew who he was until he was accused, and I got to use accused, of murdering Lana Clarkson. And so he became famous because of her death. And it really was. Nobody cared or knew who Phil Spector was unless you were an older baby boomer and realized who produced the particular song. Phil Spector wasn't singing the song. This was, you know, how many people really knew who produced these songs? In the industry, in the music industry, yeah, it was a big deal. And the media just kept hammering home on that about who he was and et cetera to try to make this a bigger deal than it is. He's not a big deal. And all the trials that I've covered, I've never seen such a puny amount of media covering a trial.
Exactly.
There's never anybody there hardly. Just inside the courtroom were the reporters. And then, of course, court TV was the pool camera inside. But, you know, during the O.J. Simpson and the Robert Blake and Michael Jackson, we're talking about real celebrities with major fans. This guy is a miserable abuser, okay, who threatened to kill people, threatened to have people lose their job, and actually made people lose their job. He terrified people. That's why many of them didn't go to the police, because he threatened to kill them if they did. They've gone on the record with that, right in the courtroom. So, you know, I'm not defaming him.
No.
So it's Lana Clarkson who made him famous. So enough already with the wall of sound. A wall of evil and deceit.
I agree with you.
A wall of abuse.
I agree with you, and you're right. You know, we have to clarify that he's accused of murder, and hopefully a jury of reasonable people will come forward.
He wasn't not found innocent. He wasn't found innocent.
No,
it wasn't not guilty.
No.
This was a hung jury. They couldn't figure out what to do. So we do know that it was 10 for guilt and 2 for if you want to use the word not guilty, that's fine. But it was 10 to 2. That's enough for the prosecution to start filing the papers. So they're already happening there. The word is that Thursday, whether he's going to be arrested with guns drawn or all that, or he's going to report, I don't know. All that's happening. You know, whether there's going to be renegotiations of bail. Of course, his goal in life is never to step one foot in prison, which he's never spent a night in jail. He was processed and out on the street by Robert Shapiro within hours.
Yeah, that's mind-boggling.
Not even O.J. Simpson had that. Not even Robert Blake had that. You know, they all were incarcerated.
Yep, it's mind-boggling. Let's talk about Judge Fidler. There's some media reports here the other day about a threat that has come his way or came his way. How was he during this trial? Was he a good judge?
He's an excellent judge, and he's been accused of being pro-prosecution, but if you were following the trial, and I'm sure the court stenographer can point out that the objections, the amount of overrulings and the sustainings were pretty much evil. I mean, it's pretty much equal. And it just seemed that he was pro-prosecution because the defense was just pulling so many unethical and ridiculous mumbo-jumbos that he would call him on it. He'd call him out on the carpet on it. And if Alan Jackson or Pat Dixon from the prosecution were out of line, they would get it too. But the defense was pretty much, you know, paid to lie and paid to, you know, to come up with ulterior motives and theories that pretty much is mumbo-jumbo. I mean, come on. He's got blood on his jacket. Does it mean just because there's less blood that, he didn't shoot her? Please, give me a break.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't Spector have one of the gaudy attorneys at the start?
Yes. The original team was Bruce Cutler and Roger Rosen, with Bruce Cutler, of course, perform the opening statements, which was a disaster. and Spector put him on the side. Spector runs the whole show from behind the scenes. You know, he sits there like a dummy, but he's really, you know, he calls the shots. He comes alive at night. He's a vampire. So that's his world. You saw that in his last moments before he was arrested. He was coming home when the sun was coming up. You know, all that was going on between 5 and 6 in the morning.
Yeah. No, it's just
so, and that's when he used to arrive back. And then, you know, he would drop so much money that these places would stay open for it, because all of the help and all would, the tips, $500-$600 tips, would be split among staffers. That's what happened at the House of Blues. And here's another thing. I really feel everybody has their own scenario, their own theory of why did she get in the car, you know? And even the question is tilted to whose side you're on. Why would she go home with that guy?
Yeah.
That alone is the question is a rude question. She wasn't going home with the guy in that the way it was meant to sound. She was invited to go back to the mansion where he has done this before. He's invited. Right. He's had parties, after hours parties. He could have wanted to offer a $100,000 personal assistant job. You know, he could have said, "Hey, I got the script for you. Come back." Whatever it was.
Right.
But most people think that it was just his grinding her, that it was just him, and the decision was between the two of them. That's not the case. During the testimony in the trial, the employees of the House of Blues testified that they informed her on who he was, how she insulted him, how she has to fix it, how she has to change all the rules. She can sit down with him or do whatever he says. We got to fix this because we want that $500-$600 tip.
Right.
That's really what it came down to. So Lana, knowing Lana, who was only working there for a number of weeks, when I've known her for 26 years, she was very accommodating, very diplomatic, very friendly. That's why she got that job of being the hostess of the foundation room. So she probably felt terrible about calling him a woman when he first arrived, you know, saying, "Miss, we're closed."
Right.
Boom. And this is, right?
Right.
And
yeah.
this is a creature who she's going to go over and commit suicide in the house with.
Exactly. So, yeah. Makes no sense.
Yeah. So, recapping, it was the pressure put on by her managers, her bosses at the House of Blues. I duly feel that they were responsible for her finally breaking down and getting into that car, because she knew how she upset everybody. They were visibly upset with her. Whether it was on purpose or not, they were all down and out because they figured, we're not going to get our $500 tip.
Yeah. And now
nobody's thought about that in a while.
Yeah. And a life has been taken from Earth because of that. Is there any timeline as far as when the trial will begin again? I suppose that's not known.
You know, I'm not quite sure if they're going to fast-track it. You know, I think they will, and I'm not quite sure if Judge Fidler is going to remain on there. I'm not quite sure even if the same prosecution is going to be on there. I hope they are, because they have it all. They'd be a lot less expensive for the city. It's another thing people have to think about, the cost of this, the multi-million dollar trial. So,
and to run it again, yeah, exactly.
Now, I received, you know, there's hundreds of emails coming in here after trial. Can I just read a couple of real quick lines?
Absolutely.
What we're getting?
Sure.
And these are from friends of Lana. These are, you know, we have a group of those, and you see our pictures up on Court TV and CNN. You see, you know, this group that have come forward and have done the shows about who she is. Not the two characters that turned on her, the ones who claim to be her best friends. I'm not even going to give them, mention their name. But here's one that just came today from one of our friends. Dearest Ed, don't dismay. They'll get him next time, I'm sure of it. who could possibly acquit him again? There's always one or two people who want to make a name for themselves on the jury by going against their better judgment. Now, the fame craze has even ruined our legal system. What a pity. He'll get his. He's always wanted to kill someone, and he picked on that poor girl. All for now, just me. Well, this is somebody that was very close with Lana.
Right.
And knows me pretty well. And that's, and then here's another one that just came in. He says that there's another one that says, you know, snap out of it. It's not over yet. You know, meaning snap out of it for me.
Right, yeah.
They know that I'm down and out. And then there's this incredible there's this guy who is who put together a, I don't know if I sent it to you, but it's a potential, it's just, it's a sort of a, let me get the right word. It's a sarcastic look at the desperate defense of Phil Spector.
You did.
The jury that was bamboozled.
You did send that to me. Share that with the audience.
Yeah, it was though Lana Clarkson wrote it in her diary.
Right.
And yeah, and so I shared it with everybody, and it's her last entry is into her diary, and it says, number one, Mom just brought me all these new neat shoes. They'll be perfect for my new job. No, oh God, I almost forgot. I think I'm committing suicide. Number two. Lots of Hollywood big shots come to the House of Blues. I'm sure to make a few good contacts. Nah, I think I'll just commit suicide. Number three, my talent video, it just came out, it's pretty good. Many think I have a gift for comedy. Too bad I'm committing suicide. Number four, I must fix the sound on my video. It's not very good. Nope, can't do it, I'm committing suicide. Number five, standing naked in front of this mirror, I realize I could take 7 years off my age. I look great. Sad, though, I'm thinking of killing myself. Number six. A nice-looking mature gentleman just got out of that limousine, and he's giving me a long look. Maybe forget it. Suicide comes first.
Yeah.
Number seven. I should concentrate on doing more character roles. You know, some actresses make a good living at it. If only I wasn't thinking about suicide. Number eight, what a perfect California day. Look at the sea is glistening. It's like joy, like liquid diamonds. Hey, not a good time to do yourself in. Number nine, I just heard a couple of small TV roles. I just heard about them. That would be perfect for me. But I won't be able to try out or audition. Suicide, you know.
Yeah.
Number ten. That creepy little Phil Spector just came in. He must have lots of connections. He wants me to see his mansion. Gosh, I hope he has a gun.
Yeah. That says it all.
It's just brilliant, and it's so Lana, you know. I mean, it's just her kind of sense of humor, too, and it just brought a tear to my eye and a laughter at the same time. So
now it
we
says
sent that out to our list of everybody that we know.
Yeah, you did send that to me, and I appreciate that. And let's hope, Ed, that the next jury, finally, the gavel of justice does swing and hit Mr. Spector right between the eyes. While I've got you, I need you to ask you about this Zsa Zsa Gabor lawsuit against Francesca Hilton. I know you're representing Francesca. What can you tell us about it?
Yes, well, I used to represent Zsa Zsa Gabor, and, you know, the poor woman is now, you know, 90-something. She's a recluse in her big mansion in Bel Air, and she's living with a character named Frederick von Anhalt, who is not a prince. He just used the name Prince, P-R-I-N-Z, and the media thought that meant prince, so they're calling him Prince Frederick von Anhalt, which he really isn't.
Okay.
He was adopted by someone in Germany that was a princess. And so it's just part of his fabrications in life. But the lawsuit was filed in Los Angeles 2 years ago, and it was Zsa Zsa Gabor and Frederick von Anhalt versus Francesca Hilton. Well, Francesca Hilton is the 59-year-old only daughter of Conrad Hilton, the great-grandfather of Paris Hilton and the founder of the Hilton Hotel chain, and Jahja Gabor, the famous actress, model, Gabor, part of the Gabor sisters. They were the original Paris Hilton group back in the 40s and 50s.
Yep.
And the world knew the Gabor sisters very well. And this is the product, the only child of that union, that crazy marriage between Conrad Hilton and Jahja Gabor. In Jahja's autobiography, she claims that the only reason she married Conrad Hilton because he raped her. So this is the product of that marriage,
right,
of that rape, is Francesca Hilton. And it's been a bumpy ride for her ever since, growing up with the beautiful Gabors. And, you know, she just had bumpy rides, both, you know, health problems and psychological problems from living with, you know, that. But the lawsuit was accusing Francesca of fraudulently taking out a equity loan on the mansion in Bel Air that her mother lives in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Francesca lives in another house, which is co-owned by Jahja Gabor. And she got into some financial difficulties, Francesca, okay? And she happens to be a comedian and a writer and a producer.
Mm-hmm.
She does stand-up comedy at the Comedy Store on Sunset Strip.
Oh.
Has been for quite some time. And but she got into some financial difficulties, and Jahja agreed to refinance the house and to help pay, you know, help catch up. And she agreed to that and signed for it. Well, Frederick von Anhalt didn't know about this, and didn't really have to know about it, because the prenuptial agreement between Jahja Gabor and Frederick von Anhalt, he signed off on any equity or any ownership in that house, which is a house that she bought on her own in 1974 and didn't want to share it with the new guy that was the prenup. This, you know, this character who's been married to her the longest for now 19 years. So it was proven in the encounter, it was proven that Francesca did not forge her mother's name, did not commit any kind of crimes, and did not do the things that Frederick said she did. Now, Jahja's name is on the lawsuit, which makes it very complicated.
Right.
So it's technically Jahja Gabor is suing her own daughter.
Right.
The only problem is that Jahja doesn't know anything about it.
Oh, jeez.
And this was all instigated by von Anhalt. And Jahja would never show up in court, would never show up at any hearings that were all scheduled over the last 2 years. And why the judge or the court system here in Los Angeles, which is different from any other part of the world.
That's true.
With all the craziness, would allow us to be paying this tax dollars, you know, to have the bailiffs in the courtroom and the lights on and juries and all of that. You know, why we have to pay for these ridiculous, meritless lawsuits. So it was just thrown out. The judge finally had enough of von Anhalt and Jahja not showing up, not cooperating, lying, deceiving, and she went public with it, the judge. And so the case has been thrown out. And once again, von Anhalt, who claims that he was stripped naked and tied up by three attractive women in Bel Air last month.
Yeah, I saw that.
And lassoed him. You know, pictures went all over the tabloids and everything. Pictures,
yeah,
that he had taken of himself.
Right.
And apparently called in a phony police report, which is being investigated, whether or not, you know, that's a crime. But I don't know for sure. He's a master manipulator of the media. He has a hotshot press guy like me. So I'm up against him with the chicanery, and I know him, and I know him, and he's good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the people have seen it. There's TMZ.com, which is the new television show, and the
right,
new blog, TMZ, which stands for 30 Mile Zone. which is a big hit show. It's all about, you know, meaningless celebrity gossip and what they're up to, and the video showing them doing stupid things. And Bonanno keeps talking to them and keeps putting the foot in his mouth. The worst thing he did was claim to the world that he was the father of Anna Nicole Smith's baby.
Yeah.
And we're still reeling from that one. And so,
well, you never know.
I could go on and on and talk about his fabrications and all, but it's not worth it. I just want to say that he put Francesca Hilton through a horrifying 2-year campaign, and he's still not done. He's still threatening to refile another suit against her.
Well,
and saying that she's a thief and she has to pay back the money. He's saying that she still has $2 million stashed somewhere. It's really a pathetic case. In all my years in doing entertainment and legal PR, you know, at Losey and Associates, I've never seen this. It's like a fractured fairy tale, you know, between the prince and the mother and the queen mother, Zsa Zsa, and, you know, the wannabe prince, Frederick von Anhalt, who has just, for the 18 years he's been living in the house with her, is just, you don't know what's coming next. It's a comedy.
Exactly.
That needs a reality show.
He should be headlining at the Comedy Store. Listen, Ed Losey, it's always a pleasure to have you. We hope and pray for justice for Lana Clarkson, and I'm going to stay in touch because I think we're going to have lots more to talk about.
Great. Thanks a lot, Dana.
Take care, my friend. Sure. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye. That's Hollywood publicist Ed Losey talking about the Phil Spector trial and Zsa Zsa Gabor and her prince. Well, that's another show. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. The podcast will be available a little bit later on. Pay close attention to tomorrow's daily commentary. We have a daily commentary online, and tomorrow's will be extra special, something that we'll have lots to talk about. Thanks again. Thanks to my guests. Thanks to everyone watching on Access Communications, listening on satellite or on the internet, either live or on the podcast. My name's Dana Pretzer, and we'll see you again real soon here on The Dana Pretzer Show.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.